Nah, not me. I can't.
Yes, you can.
I can't.
Why not?
I'm shy.
Yeah, he wasn't really shy, but he did have a good career already, so he wasn't all that interested in acting.
I kind of fell into it, honestly. I had no aspirations ever.
But once he decided to give acting a shot, you'd expect he might have to convince his family. Nope.
I didn't have to. It was my wife that convinced me.
From the hit show The Sopranos, among other things, Steve Sciarippa, now on
The Post. Anybody ask, we were at grandma's.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse, talking to cool people who are doing great things. They've got amazing stories. And I tell you, from time to time, there are people who I get the pleasure of meeting because of this show, who I either followed their career or watched their show or, you know, hope to one day meet them. They're doing cool things. Steve Sciarippa is one of those people. He joins us now on The Pulse. I appreciate you taking time out.
How you doing, buddy? Good to see you. Good to hear from you. And I'm happy to be here.
I appreciate it. All right. So we got a lot to unwrap. You're doing a show, but we'll get to that in just a second. Yeah, so we generally kind of walk through people's backgrounds, because obviously people know you for a lot of things, know you for The Sopranos. But how'd you get started?
Well, I'm from Brooklyn, and I graduated Brooklyn College. Played basketball in college 100 pounds ago, if you could believe that. And moved to Vegas. I tried out for an Israeli team because I'm half Jewish. Made the team, but they wanted me to work on a kibbutz. So I had a choice of going to work on a kibbutz or go to Vegas. So I went to Vegas, bounced around there. Eventually got a job in a hotel. I was a maitre d'. I worked with a lot of comics. Just about every big comic I've either worked for me or worked with at one point. And I started there. They asked me, hey, would you do this little bit thing I'm doing in L.A.? I'm doing this little film. I'm doing this short film. And never thought about acting. Never crossed my mind. Never read a script. Went to L.A., I know it sounds cliche, kind of got the bug almost immediately.
Huh.
Started taking some classes, dabbled in it like a hobby, couple lines here, couple lines there, had an agent friend, said I'll look out for you. I would go to LA, audition, little parts, two lines. I was happy to have two lines. Had a big job, got promoted in Vegas to an executive. Had a big house, wife, kids, I kind of, the more I did, the more I wanted to do. So I started trying a little harder, and this agent friend was helping me out, and came to New York for a wedding, and I had done some stuff. I've done a few movies. I did a King of Queens, Chicago Hope. So, you know, I knew what I was doing somewhat. I'm still learning. And came to New York for a wedding. He got me an audition for The Sopranos for an FBI agent. She said, I don't see you as that. Read this. Roll a Bobby. And
the rest is history. So it really wasn't. You know, that it was not as a young child I went to, you know, performance school and the school of
not
the arts.
All.
And
not
I wanted to, you more or less, you said you got the itch, but you stumbled into this.
Yeah, I tell people I slipped in through the back door. It kind of found me more than I found it, you know. Like I said, you know, it was fun to me, you know, but I would go to L.A. I was working hard, though. You know, but I never had any aspirations of making a living. Like I said, I had a good job, big house, two young kids. I was 40 years old by the time I got on The Sopranos, you know. The first year, I paid my own way. They paid me no money. The agent told me not to take the job. I had to fly myself out, put myself up back in New York. I made 24 grand. No, I made 22 grand and it cost me 24 to make it.
To fly back and forth. And you still had your job in Vegas.
I had a day job that first, the second season of The Sopranos, which was my first season. I flew back and forth. I did 6 episodes. I kept my day job.
And lost money.
Lost money.
Why?
Because this shot, then I got a taste of that. And I was hoping to become a series regular. And the following year, that's what happened. And then HBO moved my family to New York, and we've been here since, you know. But that's how it was. It really was. I kind of fell into it, honestly. I had no aspirations ever.
So why? But why?
I don't know if I love it, like where I have to do it, like some people. I love basketball. That's something when I was younger I had to do. But I don't know if I have that passion, but I've been very lucky. I've worked as an actor for 25 years, 26 years. I've made a living.
Yeah.
I've done okay. You know, I'm happy. I've had a good career.
It's good.
A lot of good people, you know, a lot of crappy people, but a lot of good people.
So you were season 2. So at that point, it was enough, I guess, was it, or I should ask rather than tell, was it enough of a hit that you were like, I've got to do this because you're losing money to do it? So what was it about that show that made you say, I got to do this? I'll lose money to be a part of it.
Well, you know, it wasn't so much the show, but I was by then disillusioned with my job.
Okay.
Even though it was a good job, a big job, I was booking acts, comics, big acts, Beach Boys, Frankie Valli, Frankie Avalon, you know, booking a lot of acts, big comics, you know, Dennis Leary, Bill Maher, David Spade, Damon Wayans, D.L. Hughley, on and on and on, right? George Lopez. So I was doing this. It was a good gig. I was making good money. But there was something I didn't want to do it anymore. So I was hoping once I got on The Sopranos, if I could parlay this into a series regular gig. Now, I got a job. The reason I became a series regular, I had auditioned for a show with Nick Turturro on the old WB. Remember that? The WB.
I do. Yeah.
And I got that job, and my agent was smart and went to Sopranos and said, oh, he's going to take this job. And so that's what kind of forced their hand. But
to lock you in.
That's how it was, yeah. So, and then, listen, I took a cut in pay my first year on The Sopranos.
From the big-time casino job.
Riviera Hotel and Casino. I was making good money. I took a cut in pay to be on The Sopranos.
What was your family saying? You're married with kids with the big time corporate casino job and flying back and forth, taking a pay cut to be on a TV show. I'd love to be a fly on the wall when you're trying to convince your family of that.
I didn't have to. It was my wife that convinced me.
Okay.
Right? So when I had to go back for the audition, originally, I didn't want to go back. I don't want to spend the money. I said, I got to fly myself back, put myself up. And my wife was the one that said, do this. You're only happy when you're doing this. That's why you work hard. Go and do it. She was all in.
Nice. That's good choices. That's good support right there.
Yeah.
Love
that.
She
was all in. If she would have, said, I don't think so, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you.
That's amazing. So when did it change your life? You were already living a good life financially, but the success of The Sopranos and you get that, the regular role, it just went through the roof. It cult following, huge ratings, people started making. But like, how long did it take before that changed your life?
I don't know if it ever did change my life besides kind of financially, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I always knew a lot of people. In Vegas, I could do whatever I wanted, any show, any restaurant. I had that wired. You know, in Vegas, especially the old days, more than now, it worked on the barter system.
Yeah.
I got what you want, you got what I want, and let's, you know, I want to go see Frank Sinatra at Caesars. I make a call, and I'm at Frank Sinatra at Caesars, and they want to come to my hotel and have dinner or need a suite for their, you know, girlfriend, whatever it is. I do it, you know. So as far as that, I always kind of had that part, but it changed my life. I met a lot of lifelong friends on the show. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like playing for the Yankees, living in New York and being on the Sopranos. I mean, it was kind of like you walk into a restaurant, two or three of us, and they giving you a standing ovation. It was crazy. So that was all new. Going to the Emmys, going to the SAG Awards, all of that stuff. And I didn't love every moment of it, but that was different. I still got my childhood friends. I always tell people I'm just a regular guy with a good job. I kind of lived the same as I always lived. I was able to take care of have a nice house, a nice apartment, and, you know, my kids through college and all of that stuff.
Did it surprise you the level? You said the money was not the issue. The fame, the support, the walking in places. Did it surprise you that a show with that foundation, Sopranos is about the mob, interacting in the mob, had that kind of love and support and kind of hero following for the people who were in it?
Which is the whole, you know, million-dollar question. So the audience chooses to root for these bad people.
Yeah.
Guys in the mob are bad people. Okay? Mm-hmm. They murder people. They shake each other down. They rob. They don't just do it to each other. They do it to civilians. So people that think it's fun and games and this is a joke, it's not a joke. Because I grew up around that world, right?
Yeah.
That's the million-dollar question. Why does the audience sit at home and love Tony Soprano? He does everything bad. Why? Because of the writing, because of the acting, that we have this love for this this anti-hero for sure. I don't know. Why?
I read once before, and you tell me because you're behind the scenes, and that's part of, and we need to talk about In Conversation with the Sopranos because that became a thing. It's still a thing. You kind of get these stories when you guys are on tour, and they're coming to Rivers Casino November 8th. So in a second, I'm going to ask you to talk about what that is. But I read that there were times that you guys on The Sopranos had to remind people that these are bad people, and people started becoming too sensitive to the characters, and then you would have somebody do something that was so like, oh, okay, this is in fact the mob. You can't be too much of a sympathetic person.
Well, the only guy on the show that I could say was authentic was Tony Sirico, Paulie Walnuts. Mm-hmm. It's no secret that he was kind of a peripheral mob guy. He did time in jail, and he was a legitimate tough guy, legitimate. The rest of us were acting.
Right.
Uncle Junior couldn't be, he's so far away from that guy, as is Michael Imperioli, as is Jim Gandolfini. Mm-hmm. Jim was a Birkenstock wearing, music loving, you know.
Crunchy granola
not
guy.
Not a tough guy, not a tough guy. I mean, a strong guy, but not a wise guy type guy. Grew up suburbs of New Jersey, you know. We had incidences where people, I think I've heard about it, like with soap opera people, you know, they people get delusion that you're that guy. Mm-hmm. And it still happens now. They think they're joking and they'll go, oh, don't kill me, you know,
right.
Which is so ignorant. But I did have an instance. I lived in Little Italy in New York for a couple of seasons. I'm taking my dirty laundry down to the dry cleaner Monday morning. Show was on the night before. Neighborhood guy stops me. Oh, Steve. Yeah, what's going on, Rock? His name was Rocky. Hey, man, you know I love the show, but anybody who's ever killed anyone knows that's not how you do it. Oh, okay, Rock, I got to get going. So Michael had an instance. A guy was showing him how to strangle somebody with a piano wire. And people did and do get mixed up. Hey, you know, I got a guy, he's in Rikers Island, blah, blah, blah. What's that got to do with me? I'm an actor, you know.
Yeah. It's like a blessing and a curse.
Show to promote something once, and he was talking stupid at one point, you know. You get that, you know, but I guess that's, you know, people are very invested in your character, and they're at home, you're in their living room, and I guess that's just part of it, you know. Many a guy, you're sitting in the living room and you go, oh, he seems like such a nice guy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had several people on the show who have played these kind of iconic characters who talk about sometimes there is the separation. We had a gentleman from the show Insecure who said that on two different occasions, women came up to him and slapped him in the airport for how he had treated the character on the show. And he's like, I'm just an actor. It's a blessing and a curse, I would imagine. It means you're really good at your role, but people need to remember it's a role.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's another thing that's a pet peeve for a lot of actors. Oh, you're not even acting. That's you up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, why don't you try to play you on TV? You know, with 200 people watching and cameras in your face. See how that goes.
Yeah.
That's an insult. They think they're complimenting you.
Respect the skills. All right. So the cool part. So during, I guess it was COVID when you started the podcast, you and Michael Imperioli talking about all of this kind of behind the scenes and doing all those episodes. And then that kind of grew into this tour In Conversation with the Sopranos.
No. We've been doing this for years.
Okay.
We've been doing In Conversation with the Sopranos in different versions for 15 years.
Okay.
Well, as a matter of fact, we toured Australia in 2019. It's myself, Vinny Pastore, and Michael Imperioli. We started the podcast, you know, before COVID. We had the idea and we were all set up to go. Then COVID hit. And we both looked at each other and said, we're supposed to start this thing. Who gives a crap about the Sopranos? The world is coming to an end here. Mm. Honestly. I said, who cares about this show? It's a show. We didn't even know it was the beginning stages. I mean, it's a scary time, right? Mm-hmm. But people, it had been announced. So people had been, you know, messaging us. We really need this. We really need this. I'm home. I'm stuck at home. So we talked about it. And a couple of weeks in, we decided to try it. And we said, we don't know how this is going to work. We were both very depressed. Michael was in California. I was in New York City. It was a very depressing time, not just for me and him, but for the world, right?
Yeah.
I know it was for me. We did it and it struck a nerve. People were at home. They got much enjoyment out of it. We tried to make it as enjoyable, funny, silly, and informative as it could be. It was a huge success. We went through every scene of every episode and we had almost every cast member, director, writer, casting person, producer. So it was all over the world. I mean, it's very popular in Australia and the UK and, of course, here in the United States. And so we did that. And that took us about a year and 8 months to finish. And we did it once a week. And we continue to do the show, you know, with Vinny. Without Vinny, sometimes, you know, and we tell behind the scenes stories. It's all kind of comedy driven. We have a comic. He opens up the show. Then he's asked us prepared questions and we tell funny behind the scenes stories. And we show clips of the show, slides, clips, Q&A, meet and greet. And if you're a Soprano fan, it really is, you don't want to miss it. It really is good, you know. You got to be a Soprano fan. If you never saw the show, it's not for you, but we've been doing it. We do theaters all over the country. We've got a big UK tour coming. We've sold over 17,000 tickets already. The tour's in February. We're going to be November 8th at the Rivers Casino.
Here in Philly.
Michael and Vinny. It's going to be a good night. If you're a Soprano fan, I'm telling you, you'll enjoy it. And some great stories. You know, Michael wrote 5 episodes. He was there from day one. Vinny was there from day one. You know, I came on, second episode, the second season. So, you know, we got a lot to talk about.
I think it's really interesting. And just talking to you now and the handful of stories you've been able to share and people stopping you in the airport, I think that are stopping you on the way to the laundromat. I think that people have this voyeuristic fascination. Like, I know your character, but what was really going on? And that's why I think shows like this are so fascinating and so interesting. Does it surprise you? We talked about the Sopranos success. Does it surprise you that this many years later, you still have this kind of hunger for these discussions or to see you guys or to come to the shows?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. But, you know, what we discovered, like, during COVID was all these younger kids that were too young to watch it the first time around. Now, the show ended. The show first aired in 1998 or 99. 99, I think. But there's kids, they were too young to watch it. So we know that there's kids in their late teens, early 20s that are watching the show now. Social media wasn't as prevalent back then. Now with Instagram and Snapchat and TikTok, all these kids have discovered this show. The show holds up like it was written today.
Yeah.
You know, of course you got the computers and the cars, but otherwise it's not corny. You know, some shows and you watch it now and you go, man, that's a corny show. How did I like that? This is not that. This was so well written, so well acted, so smart, that it is popular and gaining more and more popularity. I think more people watch it now than watch it then, because back then only people with HBO watched it. Now it's streaming. It's all over the world.
Everything on demand. Anything you want to watch, you can go back and do it. And I found myself doing that, going back and watching some of the shows like The Sopranos that I loved back then. And you're right, it remains authentic. So In Conversation with The Sopranos will be here at Rivers Casino November 8th. People can go ahead and start. You might as well go ahead and get tickets because it's going to sell out. So make sure you grab the tickets so you're not left out of the discussion. It is a couple other things, and I appreciate you spending this much time. You've done other things. Tell me about this. Who's Willie Boy?
you got a
kid's book.
I have a very famous wiener dog. We have a book coming out in April called Willie Boy Eats the World. We just started making videos for fun with no expectation. And I guess the world has took a liking to Willie. And so, you know, I feed him. He eats anything. We've got millions of views. One of our videos got 16 million views on Instagram. It's quite amazing. And we're not even going for it. It's just, you know, we on the beach and I feed him an apple and he's the sweetest thing. So that's Willie Boy. And he did an episode of Blue Bloods. I was on Blue Bloods for 9 years, which I loved because you played a mob guy for 7 years, and now you played a cop for 9 years. I enjoyed that 146 episodes, and we were lucky they cast Willie as my dog on Blue Bloods.
Was that hard? We got two more questions, and I know you're running out of time. I appreciate you doing this. But it was interesting because you were on Blue Bloods longer than The Sopranos. But was it hard to sit there and play those things that are polar opposites, or are they? You know, it's kind of a different character. But people know you for one thing, and then you're transitioning into something else.
Well, what happened was this. After The Sopranos ended, it ended in June of 07. I got cast as a suburban dad in a series called Secret Life of the American Teenager. Mm-hmm. That was very important to me. That bridged the gap. Okay. Because then they want to put you in a box. You're only just a mob guy. Now, look, I'm not going to play an English professor, all right? But I could play a blue-collar Italian-American. There's Italian-American dentists, doctors, foot doctors. Matter of fact, a lot of my doctors are Italian-American, right? And so from all walks of life. But of course, you have a vowel at the end of your name. They want you to be a mob guy. So I broke out of that by playing character for 5 years, 110 episodes. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was in L.A. I commuted to L.A. three or four times a month. I didn't want to move there. It was a wonderful job. A couple of years or so later, I got cast as Anthony Abitamarco, a blue-collar, old-school cop. It was not hard. I enjoyed it. A lot of cops stopped me in the street. I asked them, do you believe me? And they said, very much so. And really, when you think about it, you're on the screen, you're watching a guy. Do you believe him or don't you? Do I believe this guy is a doctor? Do I believe this guy is a cop, as a mob guy? That's it. You could simplify it. And you'll see, you watch shows and you go, I don't believe this guy. I don't believe this guy's a doctor, or I don't believe this guy could be a detective. But I got a lot of compliments from the NYPD and really cops from all over the country, fan mail. So I enjoyed that tremendously. It's been great, you know?
Yeah, I think it really does speak to what you talked about earlier, the acting. People say, you're just being you. Really? I'm playing all of these different things and you believe it. Like, that is a tribute to the acting. I know we've got to let you go. So we're going to remind people again, In Conversation with the Sopranos. It's on tour. Like, you can check them out, follow them on social media, follow the website. You can check them out a lot of places. But in Philly, Rivers Casino, November 8th, the whole team will be there. So we encourage you to go ahead and check that out. But we end every episode of The Pulse. The theme of the show is Use Your Voice for Good. So when you hear the phrase, use your voice for good, what does that mean to you?
Use my voice for good. Listen, I try to be positive, you know. I do a lot of charity stuff that I believe in, quite a bit. I'm a big, it's a big charity in, it's a small charity for ALS. I'm very involved in New Jersey. They have my buddy Phil Cuzzi, Major League umpire. He has a charity for years. Everybody's volunteered. Nobody makes any money. I try to do positive stuff on social media. I'm not a guy, a political guy that shares my views. I personally don't believe in that. I'm just an actor that reads lines that someone else writes. My views are my views, you know, whether you agree with them or not. So I don't need to put that out there, in my opinion. I try to do positive stuff with my dog, Willie. He makes people smile. And that's all that matters to me, you know. Try to make people feel good. The world is in a rough place right now, man. And try to stay positive and just be nice.
Yeah.
You know, when I raised my two daughters, I never said I want them to be the smartest, the best athletes. It didn't matter to me. Me and my wife said, let's just make them be nice people.
I like
everything else will fall into place if you're nice.
the basic premise we can all embrace. Steve Sharippa, thank you so much for spending time with us. We appreciate you, everything that you've done. We look forward to the show.
Go Knicks! Go Knicks!
Oh, come on. We went through the whole thing. Can't do that to us. Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast with actor Steve Sharippa, known for The Sopranos and Blue Bloods and a couple of other things. But it's got a really cool story. It's an inspiring story for people who just need a little encouragement to go on out there and follow or chase their dreams. Do me a favor, hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is that shows up on your screen so you get a notification every week when a new episode of The Pulse comes out. You can download the Fox Local app so that you can watch all of the episodes on demand, and you can hit me up on social media at BillAFox29 on all platforms. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and I leave you today as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.